Okay, you are very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Thanks once again to Eamon McGee, Dr. Peter O'Rourke and Emma Gover, our guests for the Friday panel. And thank you for texting in as the day wore on. Just one that came in I thought particularly interesting. Greg, as someone with MS and only recently progressed to a wheelchair, I'm shocked at the large stores are making my life more difficult by putting doors on all the fridges. All these doors open out the way. Can anyone explain why this decision was made? Well, I mean, any decision that these big organisation makes make, I presume, for efficiency on their behalf, but certainly a complication, according to this caller, as a wheelchair user. If that's been your experience, let us know. 086 60 25000 or WhatsApp. The same number actually. WhatsApp or text 086 60 25000. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Co. Good morning to you, Seamus. How are you keeping?
Morning, Greg. Yeah, great. Thank you. Great
good to have you on the show again. Thank you so very much indeed. Right, before we get into listeners' questions, and we're still open to them on 086 60 25000, a quick word on legal matters across the water. For now, Trump's legal issues are paused, so to speak. It's now the turn of the Bidens. Now, not Joe Biden himself, but a close associate. What is Hunter Biden in court for?
Yeah, well, it's nice to give it a bit of balance because for, you know, times in the past, we did focus a bit on Donald Trump's woes, and there's several more maybe yet to come. But on the flip side of that, yesterday we had Joe Biden in France, you know, and with the D-Day commemoration, and it was great to see. And back across the water then, you have the son, Hunter Biden, who is really, like you could say, he's in somewhat deep water, but it's his first time in such a situation being prosecuted. He's also facing a tax issue. What's fascinating about is this, though, Greg, that some time back it was reported that there was a plea bargain done with regard to these problems, that would eliminate any court appearance, especially right in the teeth of the election, so to speak. And that collapsed. There's been really no real explanation as to why. So Hunter Biden, unfortunately, has an addiction problem. And back in 2018, he purchased a firearm. And there is a statutory provisions questionnaire that under federal law, which you have to answer. And some of the questions, queries on it, are relevant to any addictions, drug addictions or drug use, etc., to which he answered in the negative. Now, interesting, the time is relevant because he had been, at that stage, he had come out of rehab. So he was basically saying, well, he wasn't a user. So he was answering no to the questions. And that has come back against him, so to speak. He purchased the firearm. Now he was charged with having an illegal firearm and also lying in respect of the answers to the questionnaire whenever he was taking out the license in the first instance. Now, it's bizarre then what happened or how it all transpired, because it was the wife of his deceased brother, Bo Biden, who at that stage was in a relationship with him. And she discovered this Colt revolver in his car. Then it's only yesterday or the day before she was given evidence on it. It was unbelievable. She disposed of it, put it in a bag, and went to a shopping centre and put it in some type of bin. And a pensioner who was looking for recyclables came along and found it. And hence everything triggered from there. So there's big questions about whether or not at the time was he actually an addict then? Was he in recovery? They're also producing texts from her to him and him saying, I want to get sober, and whether that means alcohol or whether it means drugs, etc. But it's very serious because the penalties could be up to 25 years in jail. I'm not saying for one moment that that's anywhere likely. And it could be something very small or very, very reduced. But at the same time, this is going on while his dad, you know, is going to be fighting one of the toughest battles in his life.
One of the problems for him.
Interesting, just to finish on this is quite fascinating. Joe Biden has said that if his son is convicted, he won't pardon him.
Yeah, so which is quite interesting. Now, part of the evidence as well, the lady you mentioned found remnants of crack cocaine and drug paraphernalia in the car, but she says she didn't see him use any drugs in the run-up to her discovering the gun. In terms of prosecuting the case, it's very circumstantial, really, isn't it? Unless there's a video of him, you know, doing drugs the shop buying the gun. Yes, I'm not being facetious there, but it would look to me like very difficult to not be able to establish, very easy to establish some reasonable doubt there.
Yeah, I think you're on. I think you're fairly on the money. You're getting very near the critical point because the forms that were signed for were the 12th of October. Well, the gun was found, I think it's probably about 10, maybe 11 or 12 days later than that. So whatever happened in between, he could have relapsed and could have become a user again. But on the 12th of October, whenever he was completing the documentation, that could all have been perfectly true at that particular time. And he could have been recovered from rehab and was back out and was totally clean and not a user on the 12th of October. And that would be the argument I'm sure that we're going to hear a lot more of whenever the defence gets going in the coming days. And also on the point you're saying, yes, beyond a reasonable doubt, there should be enough in that. I would have thought it's just the way that this has unraveled against them. It's slightly bizarre, you know, the discovery of the revolver in the bin, you know, the pensioner discovers it and then this starts happening. It's kind of only could happen in the States, some would say. But the serious consequences are the embarrassment of it that it could have. For, you know, if you're saying like Trump is convicted, well, if he can throw back, well, sir, the president's son, you know, if that transpired. So it's not helpful. It's not helpful for Biden. Is it terminal or will it have a big impact? I doubt it.
I think the biggest problem facing Joe Biden and his team is the footage from his visit to Europe. And I'm not on about edited footage, which was designed to show him in a particularly bad light. I'm on about just the general footage that is available without a skin in the game. You know, he looks like a man who is very frail and often confused, which is really quite troubling if I were in America voting. And as I say that as someone who, as best as I can, advocates for older people and all that type of stuff. And I'm not talking about some of the doctored footage, just generally speaking, he does look like a person who is not really quite steady on his feet and somewhat confused.
Well, I don't know that I agree on the confused aspect. I think that might be taking it a little bit far. I think we are observing from afar as well, and we are really putting him under the microscope on that. He is, of 81 years of age, and a man of that time of his life and having been in the political career he has had. He's entitled to look a little bit tired, I would think, and that's only... would be only natural. Is he capable? Is he competent? You have to look at it from this side that the Democrats are taking it that he's the only one that they believe that can take on Trump and that could be re-elected against Trump. And they're playing that card. Now, everything is riding on it. The thing about the confusion, look at if you put Trump under the same spotlight.
Oh, 100%.
I think it was the same result.
No, I agree.
In Arizona, correct me if I'm wrong, but during the week he was in Phoenix, Arizona, somewhere like that, which is one of the flip states that went the other way this last time round, and there was a few of them critical ones. So therefore, there's big concentration around a few states. But anyway, he was in Phoenix, Arizona, and he was using words like "that's bullshit," and he was talking about the very serious issue about security around the border, of which there was somewhat it's unbelievable. I think the there was a figure of 2 million mentioned coming over in a year, in a calendar year, and about 28 or 30,000 Chinese as such. So he's saying, oh, we have these things called tariffs, you know, So using this type of language, you know, we can really hurt them. And just the language and the demeanour, you know, I wonder to myself, like, you know, is he fit?
If he wants, yeah, it's not presidential.
Is he fit to hold high office and the highest office nearly in the land? And his general, and this, and then let's take it more serious. And this is what sounds to me ludicrous that Biden introduced an executive order this week on Tuesday in an attempt to curb the crossings by making it that you could not apply for asylum if you crossed illegally. That's basically what the executive order was. That same policy, Trump tried to introduce that when he was in power. He has come back now and he says that's BS. That's what he's used the word. That's BS. And he will reverse that as soon as he gets in. Now, Biden also in the Senate, and this again, it shows you, you know, to what side, like riding two horses all the time. Biden tried to introduce into the Senate a bipartisan bill to deal with the issue on the border and have agreement cross border, the Democrats and the Republicans, which makes perfect sense. It was supposed to be a very far reaching it was a legislation that may very well be needed, something that Trump would have brought in himself.
Yeah, but the elections
Trump actually diametrically opposed. Yeah, told the Republicans to vote against.
Yeah, but that's because that's going to be really one of the key issues on which the election is run. And if it is put to bed prior to the election, that's very damaging to Trump. So, you know, politics at the very highest level of people's lives is being played here.
Very much so. Yeah. But the point about the immigration and the security. Like he was the guy that talked about the wall, and here then when his opposite number is proposing to bring in really measures, proper legislative measures, and introduces one during the week, he says it's BS. So I mean, you're talking about trying to advance the cause, and then you say that the other man looks frail. Yes, he does. Look at it's the middle ground, and you mentioned there's three to seven states, and it depends what way they will go, and they'll decide at the beginning of November. Who will be next in the big seat. But interesting, too, is it's a rematch, Greg. It's a rematch between the two of them.
Yeah,
and
okay.
It's been an awful long time, I know, since there has been a rematch, 70-odd years between the two same candidates, and also the first for Biden's son, you know, being prosecuted and Trump having now been convicted. So, there's a lot to watch.
Yeah, it's almost alternative reality stuff. But anyway, it is happening.
Yes, it is. Yeah, indeed.
Let's get to some questions from listeners. We're in the company of Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Co., Remelton and Letterkenny. Could Seamus discuss the right to be forgotten rule? My son was prosecuted for possession of a significant amount of drugs, but he has turned his life around since. Does he have the right to ask for Google to remove the story?
It's a very interesting question because it covers two aspects and I'm not sure is the individual confusing it with there is a criminal side that applies with regard to spent convictions which came in about 6 or 8 years ago maybe now whereby if an individual has a conviction which is considered a minor conviction, and 7 years has passed since they have had it, then they do not have to disclose that in completing certain documentation and with regard to records, etc. Now, I have to say that is in respect of minor. So let's look at the question here. It's a €50,000 prosecution for possession of €50,000 of drugs. I wouldn't consider that would be considered minor. So I don't see it coming under that heading. But I think what the caller is actually referring to, it's not entirely clear. I think the caller is referring to this right to erasure, which was brought in with GDPR back in 2018. And that is the right to be forgotten. Now, there are exceptions to that. And this is where Google will come into it. It seems to me that it's implied that there's a story on Google in relation to this matter, which they would like to have seen, like to see wiped, and you could understand that. Now, there's certain criteria and exceptions that apply in relation to the GDPR matter. And there's one that probably, I think, maybe captures this or could go a long way to it, and that's what's called the freedom of information. So Google will probably argue that this is in the public domain. The freedom of information would dictate that they're quite entitled to have that published. It was in the public domain and it did happen there. And freedom of speech. And it's also, they could argue again on the exception, that it's in the public interest that that should be there. So if that is the case, I think they would have a lot of difficulty succeeding to get Google to take that down. However, I'm absolutely in total favour of them pursuing that down that route. I think that that is the route that probably will be going down. I think that the spent conviction route wouldn't apply with a drug charge of this ilk, of this type of nature, €50,000 of drugs. I think that'll be considered more than a minor offence. The right to erasure under the GDPR legislation is probably the route to follow. If you want me to call it, I think that it could be resisted by Google on the basis of freedom of information, and it's in the public interest, and it's already been in the public domain, and they have a right to have that up and to report on it. I won't try to give a view as to whether that's right or wrong.
Good morning. Question for Seamus. I'm planning to put in an offer on a site of land which has planning permission. Presumably it's outlined planning permission granted. However, on checking planning, it appears to be for a family member of the person that's selling it. Do I have to reapply for planning, and is this likely to be rejected as I'm not from the area? Now, unless you're building it with the plans, I presume it's outlined planning permission. So if it's me, my brother has applied on this land for planning permission, they've been awarded it, I'm selling it to someone from outside the area, is it likely that the planning will also be granted for them, or because they're outside the area, is it likely to be rejected?
Well, before I think I would make any offer or bid or get involved is, and they have access to this, they should, with the planning permission, check out with the local authority the position in relation to the restrictive condition that's on the planning. There is a restrictive condition in that, as you have stated it there, that it's for the benefit of a family member, and or somebody in the locality, I think that as well. So if it's someone who's not in the locality, then is that condition going to be strictly applied? If it is, they could be in breach of planning, and then there would be facing enforcement type action, which they do not want to go. They wouldn't only be buying a site, they'd be buying trouble. So that's not the route to go. So I think the port of call is with the planning department to make a planning inquiry, see what the view would be to make an application to amend that condition in the event that they go ahead with the acquisition and take the matter from there, and then make what I would consider to be an informed decision on it. But that is definitely, as it stands, is a restricted condition, and it's caveat emptor. There is planning permission on it, and the person selling will say, well, they have the planning permission. It's up to them to be able to meet the conditions. And when they go down the route then, if this condition is enforced, they could be in difficulty.
OK, more from Seamus Gunn. More of your questions after these. OK, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It's voting day today, of course, in the local and European elections. And if you just happen to be listening to us in Limerick, the mayoral election as well. And we can't talk about it, really. Some very interesting messages coming in, though, as to some patterns that are being seen around the place. Maybe we can dig a bit deeper into that tomorrow. Question for Seamus. A son is in residential home care. When is the ward of court going to change? You're muted there, Seamus. My apologies. Well, not my apologies, but go ahead. Yeah.
The assisted decision-making legislation of 2015 was eventually implemented last April. So this was to streamline these type of applications and to give the jurisdiction from the High Court to the Circuit Court and to make it more accessible for people. The Decision Support Service is the group that are in charge of such matters now and has been set up specifically for that purpose. There are teething problems in relation to it with regard to setting up enduring powers of attorney. I would recommend that people that are considering it, that they go on the DSS site for themselves and to see what is involved. One of the complications with regard to putting in place the enduring powers of attorney is that one of the requirements is that there has to be a certificate signed by a solicitor that the person is not is capable, not under any duress, and is putting it in place voluntarily of their own wish. But the issue that the trouble that can give rise to is that if the solicitor hasn't been dealing with it in the first instance, he may not be in a position to furnish such a certificate. That is causing a lot of disquiet. So that is one of these problems that is ongoing and will have to be resolved. In relation to the residential care and the point and the ward of courts, the transmission from the High Court, that is actually ongoing, but it has not concluded yet. It would mean that the Circuit Court would then have the type of jurisdiction that the High Court would have, and the person is probably going to be discharged from wardship and a care person, a care representative appointed in their stead, which is probably going to be the committee that previously represented them. But that is ongoing. But the legislation which came in 2015, and don't ask me to explain why it took to 2023 before it really did commence in respect to this. Certain aspects of it were, but this is a very, very critical area, and it's an area that impacts on very, very many people's lives in relation to dealing with planning and their planning going forward and planning estates, etc., and in particular with enduring powers of attorney. So I would encourage people to check out the Decision Support Service site for themselves, and then I think they should consult with their legal representatives as to how to move forward. But the changeover is not yet complete.
Okay, something of a hypothetical here, I think. If we are husband and wife, and I as wife have been left land and a house, some months later I, the wife, die, is my husband still entitled to own the house and land that I have been left in the will, despite it not being fully put into my name yet?
Yeah, well, I think the key, and you can correct me if I have misinterpreted this, is that I think the caller says that the property is in joint names initially.
No, I think they've inherited it. I think sounds like to me is the wife has inherited the land and a house, but she dies. Does the husband still get that land and house even if it hasn't been fully transferred to the new owner because of, you know, how the process...
Oh, no, I'm getting with you now. Yeah, it's not held jointly. Well, if it's held jointly, first of all, the survivor succeeds to it. If an individual passes away and is entitled when they pass away to a property which has not been registered or dealt with or put in their name, or maybe probate hasn't even been extracted to the estate in which they have an interest. However, in law, whenever they pass, they have that as an asset, and that would form part of their estate, mm-hmm. and therefore would fall into their estate and be distributed in accordance with their will. If they die intestate under the Succession Act, then it passes by way of two-thirds if there's a spouse, and one-third is divisible among the children. But it certainly would still form part of the individual's estate.
In the same wheelhouse here, if I'm left a house and want to sell it on, do I need to put it in my name first, or does the will make me the legal owner?
Well, the executor will make you the legal owner whenever probate is extracted and the complete what's called a deed of assent and an application to the land registry is signed off on by the person who is to inherit it. But the question they're asking is, do they have to do that? I would suggest that if they do not want to register it, when they would have the administration or the probate extracted, that then the legal personal representative of the deceased could sell it under the power given to them on the probate or the grant of administration. So the legal per rep would be the vendor as the personal representative of the deceased registered owner. And then the individual who is the beneficiary of the house would ultimately receive the proceeds of the sale. Now, there could be a slight advantage in that, because at that point, then, well, you know the value for the purpose of calculating if there's any capital gains. It probably is more efficient because they can sell on immediately. They could put the property on the market subject to a grant of representation being raised and issuing, or a grant of probate issuing, and then move on and sell it. But they will still be facing, there isn't really any tax benefit, because they're still facing capital acquisitions tax, inheritance tax will still apply. It'll apply in respect of the actual value then that they sell the house for, but it will still be there and still have to be dealt with. So, but it could be more efficient, but it, and it would not have to be put in their name if they go down that route.
All right, just time for one more, Seamus. Hi, is there, there is a house next to me and it's been empty for 20 years or more and it's run down. I know the person who owns it, but they are no longer with us. Their family is in England, but they don't know who they are. How do I go about getting it bought, or can the council do anything for me? Thanks.
Well, you could inquire, but the first thing I would suggest to do is probably for trying to track down people. There are different types of genealogical services that are available out there. There's different firms do it, Find Later, one of them comes to mind. They could, if they're trying to track people down, if they're trying to track out who's the owner, they would probably conduct a search. If they have a map of it, they can use that map to do a search in the Property Registration Authority, Tailge Éireann, and then work from there on it. Of course, make an inquiry. They can do so with the local authority. But if it's still in the individual's ownership, they would have to, and they've passed on, you're probably talking about dealing with it through their estate, and they'd have to maybe then conduct an inquiry to see has there been any administration or probate taken out, and then make an approach to the owners with a view to acquiring it at that point.
Brilliant stuff as always, Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Co, based in Remelton and Letterkenny, but also strong online presence, Seamus.
Yes, we hope so, Greg. Yeah, Donegal'sLister.ie, or just keep it simple, gun.ie. We should be there.
Chat to you soon, Seamus. Thanks very much. Hope in fact, so. We'll chat to you over the weekend. Thank you very much for your time. Okay. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Seamus Gunn there. And talking of the weekend, I shall remind you of what you can look forward to over the weekend. Let me see here. What can you look forward to? Right, so tomorrow, of course, you're voting today, right? So tomorrow, Saturday, we're going to be on air with you just after the 9 o'clock news tomorrow morning. We're going to set the scene from the Aura Leisure Centre as the boxes are opened and ballot papers are sorted. So what effectively that means, you're going to your local school or wherever it might be, courthouse, you cast your vote. All those boxes then are all brought to the Aura where they are sorted and what have you. At that point, there are teams of tallies people that are watching what's going on. A lot of the parties work together on that. And we get some idea of number ones and what have you. So we'll get trends from all the various ends. It's Buncrana North and South, Innishow North and South that's been opened first, for an example. So we'll start getting an idea of who's doing really well, who perhaps is not doing as well as they might expect in their own local area, that type of stuff. So we'll be there between 9 and 10, setting the scene, talking to our teams that will be out in the various centres at the weekend. And as any information becomes available as it relates to tallies, we'll bring that to you first here on Highland Radio. We also have a panel on air from noon with expert analysis. There's lots to talk about. There could be some shocks. You know, there's some interesting things going on today and have been going on for the last couple of weeks in terms of, you know, people going up, people coming down, all that type of stuff. So we'll be speculating over that. Again, we might be getting further information as more boxes are opened at that time. And that continues throughout the course of the day. You won't miss a thing. On Sunday, we've got teams out at the John Bosco, Aura, Finn Valley Centre, Carn Community School and the Highlands Hotel as counting begins. So we'll go on air around the county between 9 and 10. Again, sort of recapping what we know in relation to tallies from Saturday, setting the scene in the local centres, who's there, what's going on, and maybe predicting when we might start to get some results. Again, we'll have another panel for you from 12 noon as a picture begins to take shape, and we'll be on air bringing you all the news and interviews from across the county for the rest of the day. So we'll be grabbing candidates, those perhaps successful, those unsuccessful, talking to them as soon as there are any declarations from any of the stages right across the county. We'll be live, so you'll hear first exactly what is happening, and then we'll get reaction from candidates. So really, we have you covered left, right and centre. That's all on the radio. Tune in on the radio in your car, at work, at home, whatever you want to do. But if you want to watch all of the coverage, and we've got cameras in all of the centres, including the Aura, we will be streaming live across YouTube and Facebook and on X. If you want to watch on a smart TV or Fire Stick at home, so you can just, if you're on home on Saturday and just on Sunday and you just want to watch it as a TV show, you can do so. YouTube's the best option there. Your smart TV is YouTube. Your Fire Stick is YouTube. And you can also follow across social media, regular updates from all Cant centres on Sunday and from Aura on Saturday. We're using the hashtag HighlandLE24. So that's Highland Radio, of course, local elections 2024. But the hashtag is HighlandLE24. And we will be with you on Sunday until such time as we get the last person over the line, providing, obviously, things aren't suspended until Monday. And if it is, then we'll get you sorted for Monday as well. So, if you're into elections, if you want to find out how that local fellow, a local woman in your area is doing, whether you expect them to do well or otherwise, then we have you covered right across the county. Just to remind you, by the way, obviously the voting card, it's better if you have it. It's more efficient. If you're on the electoral register, you do not need the voting card. You just need some form of identification with you, providing your name's on the register and you're going to the right place to vote. Greg, I'm just returning from lovely Dalyan in Turkey. Dogs and cats roaming everywhere. No dog biting, no fighting between dogs or even with cats. No dog licenses and amazingly very little poo. I asked some Turks, do they bite? I presume she means the dogs. Answer, they are friendly, they don't bite. Again, I presume she means the dogs. Where is the dog poo? Well, they did not know. Illegal breeding of dogs needs to be regulated and highly punished. Dangerous dog breeds must be stopped in Ireland. And maybe if you own a dog, not only must you get a dog license, but pass a dog owning test. So that was in Dalyan. Dogs and cats all over the place. Locals said they don't bite and they don't know where the poo is. There you go. Right, OK, we were chasing up on behalf of some listeners the condition of the nursing home. By the way, this is what we do. If you get in touch with us, we try and get answers. They're not always satisfactory, but they're on the record. Can we get a response to this text, please? We sent to the HSC, and the text read as follows. The nursing home in Buncrana is in a very poor state. When it rains, buckets are gathered to stop the rain coming in. Plaster is falling off the outside walls. It's just not acceptable that our elderly loved ones are being left in conditions like this. And we did read that out on the show earlier in the week. The response from the HSC reads as follows. The roof has been repaired with no further leaks. This will be kept under review by HSC Maintenance Department. There are ongoing maintenance work with Buncrana Community Hospital to address any issues and these will be rectified. A major refurbishment plan is due to commence at the end of quarter four 2024 in relation to upgrading the hospital. So what they're saying is they fixed the roof. They're going to see what else needs to be done. This is all ahead, though, of a major refurbishment plan, which is beginning at the end of the year, effectively. The end of quarter four, isn't it? So that's November, December. It's the end of quarter four, and that's the upgrading of the hospital. So happy to get some clarification on that. A caller says, our child was bitten by our neighbour's dog and had to go to hospital. The dog, though, was not put down. We can't say anything to the neighbour as we have to live beside them for the rest of our days. I never see dog wardens around. I'm not sure what the story is with dog wardens and how many of them are and what they can do. Greg, the day centre in Buncrana Community Hospital nursing unit closed to services or service users during COVID. It hasn't opened up again. People now have to travel to the Sleevshnacht Centre in Drumfries and only on the odd day. This isn't acceptable. We have an update somewhere on that as well, which I'll try and dig out for you. A caller says, I think we put a lot of pressure on our 17 and 18-year-olds to know what they want to do for the rest of their lives, spending thousands of euro on college fees to then maybe drop out due to a lack of interest. Yeah, I agree with you. I just would not like to be a teenager anymore now. I found teen years quite stressful for different reasons. I really didn't want to go to school. I really didn't like school. But I don't think it was anything compared to sort of maybe the stress that younger people feel nowadays. On the issue of dogs, I used to love walking Narn Beach, but I haven't been on it for over a year due to all the dogs not on a lead and running everywhere. This is sad for my children too, who can't enjoy their local beach. Yeah, I really feel that is sad. A caller says, apprenticeships are too underestimated. A brilliant way forward in a working life. Plus, young people will get paid whilst doing them and get qualified too, often with qualifications and skills recognised worldwide. Plus, the ETB has fantastic training facilities and courses. I recently visited the Ballyrain campus and was amazed with how good they are. And also, too, and we've highlighted recently, and the focus just has been on and shown by coincidence, there are so many options in different fields whereby you don't need qualifications necessarily to get in the door. It's work and train at the same time, which is a fantastic option for many people. There are more options, and that's why it's so important to try your best, to do as best you can, but not to compare yourself to others. Compare yourself to what you believe that you're capable of achieving. Just because someone next to you does absolutely fantastic, that doesn't make you any less than them. You'll get to exactly where you want to go. You'll just find your own path, and they'll find their own path. And you could be better off than them when you're 25. You just simply don't know. You just do the best you can for yourself. It's not the be-all and end-all. But that is not to say that it is not important. Of course it is important. But anyway, how long to go on the exams now? There's a break then, isn't there? And then there's some in the 20s, I think. Let me see. Hello, Greg, says the listener. Looking forward to your coverage. The big shake-up. Do you think it will be a big shake-up? See, again, I'd love to talk about it today. And I was half thinking of doing an online podcast this evening just so I could rant about it, if you know what I mean, but I'm not going to. Yeah, it could be. Like, it's difficult for me because there's things I think is going to happen, right? But I don't want, because we all live in the same area and all that kind of stuff, right? I don't want to end up, you know, people thinking I mean something bad about them. But I do think there's going to be a few things happen that people maybe aren't expecting. So we shall see. European cities are introducing stricter rules to clamp down on rowdy stag and hen parties, with suggestion Ireland should do the same. I noticed some of this in Spain. Costa Brava in Spain has become the most recent location to join the list by banning inflatable penai and sex dolls, with fines of up to €1,500. Never really got the point of the inflatable willies. Or indeed the blow-up dolls. But anyway, it's been tradition. They're not being allowed in Costa Brava in Spain anymore. And I did note someone from England commented on social media, all right then, mate, we're boycotting you, Costa Brava. And a couple of people from Spain commented underneath and says, good, that's exactly what we're looking for. Barcelona prohibits going shirtless in areas away from the beach, which I think is a good idea. I don't think there's any harm in that. I think mostly people sort of adhere to that anyway. Editor of Cork BO says similar rules could end up being in place here eventually. I can't see that. Firstly, it's so bloody cold. Who's going to take their shirt off? And I presume that's fellas they're talking about there. And secondly, I think we do hen and stag parties a little bit different here. Maybe we might have a few bevvies and that type of stuff, but I think there's a big issue. But again, maybe they're talking about Temple Bar and what have you. Reading also in the paper today that Dungiven country and folk singer Cara Dillon was shot multiple times by a BB gun whilst from Somerset, but said that while she was really shocked, she's okay. The award-winning singer stated in a post on X that she was walking in from with her spouse, Sam Lakeman, last night and was shot in the face by a BB gun multiple times by someone from a passing vehicle. Avon and Somerset police stated officers are investigating three reports of individuals being hit by a suspected BB gun pellet in the marketplace and Rodden Road in Frome. Really quite worrying, but glad she is okay. A caller says, I understood that candidates weren't allowed to have posters or endorsements near polling stations. I saw a car parked at a polling station with a candidate's name and logo on it. How is this allowed? Well, I'm not really quite sure about that because, of course, there's an awful lot of cars out there, isn't there, that have kind of been done up with people's names and faces on them. I'm not sure if these laws, strictly apply to mobile stuff. Let me know, by the way, 086 60 25,000. I think certainly in terms of, you know, standing at the door, posters within a certain meterage, they're definitely not allowed. But if I was backing a candidate and I drove up to vote and my car had their face and name on it, is that breaching the law? I don't know.